We are going to be pulling for their executive director. It is funny how this conversation comes about, Anthony Turner. While I was recently in Jamaica, I ran across an interview with Mr. Ronnie Tweet, and I said, this gentleman looks very, very interested. He looks like a guest who we could have on Grooving Radio. So I reached out to a very good friend of mine, Roy T. Anderson, the executive producer and director of the upcoming Garvey, The Untold Story. And I said, I saw a young man on television in Jamaica that I think should be in the Garvey movie. And he said, what's his name? And I said, Mr. Vivian Crawford. He says, Rasclem, he's in the movie. Anthony, you go ahead. You go ahead and introduce my guest. Go ahead.
Well, our special guest on Mic Check this morning is Vivian Crawford. He's the executive director of the Institute of Jamaica.
Relative. Yes. So you are my relative.
Yes, sir. Hold on. Go ahead, Anthony.
Well, under his watch, the Institute of Jamaica has witnessed the restoration of Liberty Hall, the legacy of Marcus Garvey, as well as a site of memory program commemorating outstanding records of our history through the installation of plaques, such as at the Old King's House in Spanish Town, where the Act for the Abolition of Slavery was read, the last house where Marcus Garvey lived in Jamaica, the birthplace of perhaps Jamaica's most outstanding nurse, Mary Seacole, as well as a plaque in Carmel, Westmoreland, in recognition of the introduction of free elementary education by the Moravians. In 2003, he chaired a submission to the UNESCO with the late Dr. the Honorable Olive Lewin as team leader, and with the assistance of a committee of 12 persons for the declaration of the music of the Maroons to be part of the intangible heritage of mankind. Only 25 such declarations have been made. He has served on the boards of the Heart Trust, Edna Manley College of the Visual and Performing Arts, the Micah University College, among others. He currently serves on the boards of the Council of the Institute of Jamaica, National Library of Jamaica, Ministry of Tourism, the Jamaica National Heritage Trust, among others.
And Mr.
Crawford is the recipient of the Order of Distinction, a Justice of Peace, and the Governor General's Achievement Award. And in 2011, he received the Gleena Award for Culture. So we welcome. I see our guest is really anxious to get going.
Is this one person you're talking about, Anthony?
Grooving Radio, Grooving Radio. Wow.
Mr. Vivian Crawford.
I'm really honored.
Yes.
And the reason why I'm honored
to be
speaking about Jamaica.
Yes, we're honored to have you. We're honored to have you, Vivian. And
it's such a privilege because there is space
from
which I sit. Mm-hmm. When that gentleman, Sir Philip Sherlock, mm-hmm. for Jamaican Vice Chancellor at the University of the West Indies, mm-hmm. when he was a student at Calabar High School, mm-hmm. he asked his teacher to be exposed to some West Indian history. And mm-hmm. the teacher told him, boy, you have no history.
Mm.
And of course, the rest is history.
Wow.
And here is Jamaica history we are discussing today.
You know,
and as you know, there is such a connection between Jamaica and America in terms of history. I said to those from Boston, hey, when you go to Boston and Portland to eat your jerk meat, mm-hmm. remember that Boston and Portland is named after Boston in America.
Mm.
Because that's where Lorenzo Baker, the banana producer, he was from Boston, and he took the shiploads of bananas from Jamaica to Boston, where he made a fortune.
Mm.
Can you believe that? And his first load of bananas left from a place called Bowden Wharf in Jamaica to Boston. Mm. And Dallas, of course, Dallas Mountain, you go to Papin, and looking over at Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Your Dallas in America is named after the son of that gentleman. You'd never believe that.
Vivian, are you kidding me?
Dr. Dallas was a Scotsman who came to Jamaica in 1730.
Wow.
And that son is Alexander Dallas. He emigrated to the United States. And he was Secretary of the U.S. Treasury from 1814 to 1816. And then his son, George Mifflin, became U.S. Vice President 1845. 1849,
yeah,
and Texas City is named after him.
Anthony, wow. Anthony, wow. You see why he's on the program this morning?
Well,
because
no, man, I mean, we couldn't even get through the introduction. The man was ready to tell.
As we would say here, we're not finished with you yet.
No.
You learned in school about Admiral Penn and General Venables.
Yes.
Right. He came to Jamaica, Admiral Penn, and took Jamaica from the Spaniards to the British.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that Penn, William Penn, his son, was after whom Pennsylvania is named.
Yes, yes, wow. Yes, 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 definitely. True history, yes. Here on Grooving Radio.
Ladies, and listen, uh-huh. Fine, I know the time is short, uh-huh, but it has to be long.
Yes, it has
when
to.
When we speak about John F. Kennedy, and when he said, "Ask not what your country can do for you,"
mm-hmm,
those words were practiced at Round Hill Hotel in Hanover.
Repeat
in
that.
1961, Villa Number 25.
Repeat
and
that.
Next time when you're going to Negri, please pause.
Anthony.
Yeah. A little of that I knew. I've actually stayed at Round Hill, and I've heard that
when
Mr. Kennedy got married, he...
Right.
He was his honeymoon in Round Hill in Jamaica.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me back up the clock a little bit. Our very special guest this morning, we can now dub him the true historian out of Jamaica. He is the executive director of the Institute of Jamaica.
I have no qualification in history.
Mr. Vivian Crawford.
I need to cover my visa, you know.
Wow. But you know, Vivian, interestingly, what I want to talk about this morning, and this is not going to be a one-part interview. Let me just warn you from now. This will not be a one-part interview. But what I want to talk about this morning, and this is what caught my eyes while I was in Jamaica recently, as you sat there and you were talking to Ronitwait, and you were talking about emancipation, Jamaica,
yes,
100 years after emancipation.
180
years after emancipation. I just want to roll back the clock a little bit. It was in August of this year, yes, that we were celebrating that anniversary. 180
yes,
years after emancipation. Jamaica coming out of emancipation, Vivian.
Yes.
What was Jamaica like then, Vivian?
Well, I hope your seatbelt is on. Because 311,000 of our ancestors were thrown out of what they called homes, their little thatch huts,
mm-hmm,
and thrown out into the woods. They belonged nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know where the next meal was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
They had no place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That is what confronted them. That is what confronted them. That is the shock of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just hold on to your seatbelt a little.
You know, oftentimes I will say to people that when slavery was abolished here in the United States, probably 99% of black people here were homeless. And as I said before, when I saw you interviewing Ronnie Tweet and you were talking about Jamaica coming out of emancipation, I because it's a conversation that we never had as youngsters around our dining table, I want to turn this program this morning into everyone's living room and dining room, and they can get an understanding of what our ancestors faced coming out of emancipation. Go ahead, Vivian.
But Clem,
yeah,
as you have there a Jamaican professor in the United States, Professor Colin Chana.
Yes.
And he continually reminded us that our ancestors, when they came to Jamaica, did not come through immigration. They came through customs, because they were regarded as goods.
Mm-hmm.
But we shock ourselves because, as Olive Senior, that book that she has written called An Encyclopedia of Jamaica Heritage,
mm-hmm,
if you don't have it into your house, your parents are supposed to discipline you. Notice I didn't say flog. Because you're supposed to have that book.
True.
But Olive Senior said, and this is what is called a strength of the Jamaican people. This is why you are where you are, to spread this good news. Because my ancestors, they told me that the things that they did not benefit from, that when they died, they know that we, their descendants, would benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And if in your house this morning, if around your community you see a lot of ants, don't spray them and think that they are mad ants. They are hurrying to take the good news to our ancestors that we have made it.
Mm-hmm.
They have made it.
That is
the custom.
Mm-hmm.
Olive Sina said, and you ask the question, what happened to these 211,000 people?
Mm-hmm.
They immediately put themselves together, according to Olive Sina, to call a social reconstruct.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled themselves together and said, we are going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to make it. And there was a gentleman from Spanish Town. He set the ball rolling. And he, Filippo, Reverend Filippo, he bought 25 acres of land in Sligoville, St. Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
And he divided them up into quarter acre lots. He bought the lots at £1 each, and he divided them to quarter acre lots and sold them for £3.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where they established what we call free villages. Of course, people would have a template for the free village because the Maroons in Akampong had got their freedom from 1838.
Mm-hmm.
And let me shock you, last year, Honorable Mike Henry in Parliament read a statement from Oxford University Press,
mm-hmm.
where they sent regret that in their history of Jamaica, they had never included that the British were beaten by a nanny
mm-hmm.
and the Maroons, because that in those days Britannia ruled the waves. And it was a shame to say that the Bush ruled Britannia,
mm-hmm.
because the Maroons camouflaged themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So these places were built. They had learned from the Maroons. They got a template of how you run a community.
Right.
I can tell you that I'm from a Maroon community, Moortown in Portland,
mm-hmm.
where Nanny is buried. We got the freedom in 1738. And in the long history there, we have one murder, and I understand it was a murder of passion.
Mm.
So the point is that there's a social reconstruct and how you are supposed to manage.
Mm.
Crime and violence, they just look on it, it's a shame.
Mm.
But I hasten to tell you that in 1739, 1 year after the abolition of slavery, there the governor Metcalfe had to write his first report to England to say what was going on, because people thought we were going to chop up ourselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to be massacred in the island. Nothing like that happened. Guess what the governor wrote to say? That he couldn't believe that how quiet and dignified the people were. That was the report that went to England
mm-hmm.
in 1839.
Mm-hmm. So what happened to our colonizers then, the ones who remained in Jamaica?
Oh, that's a very, very beautiful and interesting question. They wanted us to return, but we wouldn't. And you know what they did? They, first of all, brought in the Indians, 1845,
mm-hmm.
to take over. And then when that wasn't working well enough, then they brought in the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, the rest is history. So you're now looking back in your own community. What community are you from?
St. Andrew.
St. Andrew. You have to round up your mouth, you know.
St. Andrew, yes. Sir.
Yes, yes. But they brought in those to assist with the work.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it is fair to say then that, as we say, the Chinese are taking over Jamaica. The Chinese have always been there, huh?
Oh, they have always been there. But they were here in the first instance as shopkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did too, I used to say, because I used to teach, that the discipline in the home was just terrific.
Mm.
The discipline, the children were well disciplined in the sense that there was never anything that you could say that, they were disruptive about. It was mm-hmm. very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So how were towns in Jamaica set up back then? Because our colonizers who stayed, I am pretty sure that they had a stronghold on the highlands still, huh?
Boy, your questions are so beautiful. The towns were established in such a way, and one of the criterion for towns is that is accommodation. And so when you do not have enough accommodation, it keeps the people away. So you stayed into the hills and do the production. You work the field and then you took the produce to the town to be sold. So that's how they were established.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that migration to the city.
Right, right.
So that is how they went about it. And I don't want to shock you, but Falmouth in 1776, when Falmouth had running water, New York didn't have any.
Well, that I know that Jamaica had running water long before the United States.
Exactly.
And you know, Vivian, and a part of that presentation you were doing, there was a conversation about the water situation in Jamaica. And we here at Grooving Radio, last year we did a series of presentation on the water situation in Jamaica. And I am still shocked that Jamaica, the land of wood and water, we would be experiencing this kind of water situation in the 21st century at a time when we were harvesting water and have running water in our homes before the United States.
You hit the nail on the head, because take the parishes of Manchester, St. Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Long before any government intervention, those people were harvesting water, you know. They had tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are too poor to have the tanks that share the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but there seems to be a dependency. Some of the politicians teach the people, some of them, to depend on them.
Mm-hmm.
And until people know that they are to build their own dependency. When I was a youngster, all the politicians provided were the infrastructure for schools,
mm-hmm,
and roads. That was the role of the politicians, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they attended the funeral, you will say the funeral is a success. That sort of thing.
Yes. You know, Anthony, it is kind of sad. It is kind of sad because a lot of our history get lost. And I mentioned earlier on that sometimes, you know, in the Jamaican family, conversations like these, they're not conducted around the dinner table. And even slavery, you know, it kind of blew me away recently that a gentleman called this radio station and didn't understand how our colonizers had treated us. And he said white folks had never done anything wrong to us as black people. And you know, it blew me away because that's a gentleman that has no connection to his history. Ladies and gentlemen, our very, very special guest this morning on Mic Check, he is the executive director of the Institute of Jamaica. His name is Mr. Vivian Crawford, OD. Anthony, go ahead with your question.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, Mr. Crawford, because I know you've...
Vivian,
the first national hero.
You put me into teacher chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first national hero of Jamaica is, of course, the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and I know you've done extensive work with him. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the legacy of Marcus Garvey and then bring it fast forward to 2018, where a statue was recently installed with, of course, the Honorable Louise Bennett, and there's talks about installing her as a national hero. So give me a little bit about...
Wow. Now, Marcus Garvey, you know, what Clarence was saying about our lack of knowledge. As I told you earlier, I have no certification in history. But when I was growing up, it was talked about, the heritage of this space was continually spoken about. And it was Marcus Garvey, so you hit the nail on the head, who said, a people without knowledge of their past history, origin, and culture is like a true tree without roots. And this is where we are. And born at St. Anne's Day, 1887, on the 17th of August, a significant date for us and for Jamaicans. And you are juxtaposing with Ms. Lou, who just two weeks ago, we had that statue unveiled of her in Gordontown. Now, one of the things about declaring a person a national hero, I always say, we need not have any debate, because truth cannot be hidden. It is oil. You can't keep it at the bottom. Unless you are willing to stay down there and keep it down. So I have hope that everything will resolve itself.
Mm.
So one day, the truth will emerge.
As we go back and talk about our first national hero, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, when Garvey left Jamaica, he came to New York, and he settled in a little place called Harlem.
Renaissance.
Yes, the Renaissance. And lo and behold, Garvey felt like he found a home.
Yes.
But the Caribbean nationals here, they did not embrace Garvey fully. It wasn't until the black Americans started really to gravitate into Marcus Garvey that even us as Jamaicans, yeah, and I'm not going to apologize for this, a lot of us as Jamaican, we did not feel good about Garvey because we felt Garvey was a troublemaker. Take us through a bit of the history of Marcus Garvey, now, Vivian, because we always say here on Grooving Radio, this is one of the greatest African men to ever walk the face of the earth. He came about at a time when there was no internet, no computer, no Facebook, no Twitter. And he was able to generate millions of people around the world.
Look, after 300 years of colonialism, where we were taught we have no history, everything about us, our education, was about Britain. I was taught by Olive Lewin, Dr. The Olive Lewin at DeMichael. I was never taught a Jamaican folk song. And yet, she's now associated, God bless her, for the outstanding work she did in unearthing our folk songs. The point I'm making is that the British so controlled us that we did not even know ourselves. And Marcus Garvey, I had Professor Robert Hill recently when I was invited to give the Marcus Garvey lecture in St. Anne's Bay about Garvey and women, that I understand that when Garvey was a child, he was playing with a high-color girl. They were friends, and one day, the child said to him, "And I'm playing with you again." And he said, "Why? We have been playing all this time for so many years. What happened?" She said to him, "You're too black." And that, in his subconscious, made a difference. So those people who were resenting him didn't realize he was a man ahead of his time. And that's why elsewhere in the good book, Jesus said you have to forgive people for what they do not know. They mean no harm. It's just that they do not know. And so Garvey might have left here. Yes, he left here in frustration. But I said earlier that truth must triumph. It is like oil. So I have no fear. Everything that he said will one day triumph, but it's just that time is not on our side. A lot has to be done.
Loaded words this morning from our very special guest, Mr. Vivian Crawford, the executive director from the Institute of Jamaica. A little bit of our history this morning, our story, and who best to tell our story but ourselves. You know, I'm going to stay on Garvey, because what Garvey did for us, I oftentimes again say that when his birthday roll around, all of us as Jamaican, all of us as black people, we should pause. Because without Garvey, think about this, there will be no King, there will be no Malcolm X, there will be no Mega Evers, and the list goes on and on.
They need someone to inspire.
And one of the things I also wanted to, since you're talking about Garvey, I want to talk about the role of Garvey in the whole Rastafarianism, man, because they were one of the people who helped to teach us about Garvey music.
What a beautiful point, because I tell the young people, they do not know that, you know, what is the world's latest religion is the Rastafarian religion. It's the world's latest religion. And they taught us in teaching, regard every child as a king or a queen. You do not know which one is going to wear the crown. And look at Bob Marley. He embraced the Rastafarian religion. And look, his music, One Love, declared by the same BBC. It's a song of the century. Believe it or not. And Time Magazine, Exodus, as the album of the millennium. The Rastafarian religion. Yes, so we have to give that recognition. The Rastafarians saw in Garvey that hope that they were looking for.
Wow. You know, Vivian, Professor, the late Professor Rex Nettleford told me once that when Black Americans were in search for their civil rights, Rastafarians in Jamaica was in search of their culture. Two different things, you know.
Yes.
When we come back after the top of the hour, because it is going to take a minute or two to explain that. Civil rights and our culture. Two different things.
We passed the civil rights long ago.
Long ago.
We were too confident. And when the Jamaicans went abroad with the Americans who had not yet been liberated, they were such a different. We found them very afraid, I must say.
It is said that Rastafari liberates Jamaica. But when we come back, stay where you are, Mr. Vivian Crawford. And the phone lines are ringing, but ladies and gentlemen, we are in our History 101 class this morning, and we are talking to, and I'm going to change his name now, it's Professor Vivian Crawford, OD. So, we just stopped on Robert Nesta Marley. Here are some words from Bob. And I personally refuse to be what they want me to be. I am not going to change my ways for you. I won't.
You refuse to be.
That's right.
What you wanted us to be. We are what we are. That's the way it's going to be. If you don't know, you can't educate us.
That's right.
Or no equal opportunity.
You know, Anthony, I always ask the audience here to pay attention to Willie Lynch. And we're going to talk about Willie Lynch when we come back, we're going to talk about Willie Lynch, because Willie Lynch came to the U.S. via Jamaica, via England. Willie Lynch was the son of a slave owner who owned slaves in Jamaica. And I just want people to understand that when slavery was abolished, we paid Massa. Massa got paid for us. But yet still, in the 21st century, we haven't gotten reparations yet, Anthony Turner. We spoke to Professor Hilary Beckles, the Vice Chancellor of the University of the West Indies, and he at one point wrote an open letter to then Prime Minister of England, who visited Jamaica. And he gave him that open letter, Anthony Turner. And we are still asking for reparations today. You're listening to Groovin' Radio. My name is Ras Clem. Our very special guest this morning is Vivian Crawford, the Executive Director from the Institute of Jamaica. Stay where you are, gentlemen. We will forward in a few minutes.
Soaked in the blood of the sufferers. Tell the children the truth.
That's all we dare to do. Tell the truth.
Tell the children the truth. Tell the children the truth right now. Come on in. Tell the children.
Rastafari.
We've been taken for granted. much too long. Rebel, rebel.